Happy 5th of July, ladies and gentlemen. I'm John Browner. As always, I'm joined by the one and only extraordinaire, Jason Flawhead, world-renowned comedian, master of the lab. We are Browner and Flawhead here on the Mighty 1090 ESPN. You can find everything you missed on YouTube and on the iTunes podcast store, because that's where we store all our storage. What a weekend of long confusion. I thought today was Thursday at one point this morning, but then I also thought it was Monday. So it's been a hell of a, I don't know, 3-day weekend for me. What about you, Jason?
Yeah, one of those, enjoyable ones, really, I had with the wife and some friends Sunday. Yesterday, we took a nice walk up to the circle up here and have a nice little perch over the fireworks. And I cooked a lot of food this week. I shot some episodes of the cooking show over the weekend and did a lot of different stuff. Went to the farmer's market and got a lot of cool things to cook. So I had one of those just like great weekends of just like being with the one I want to be with, being where I want to be, doing what I wanted to do. And very blessed about that. And just, you know, with all the, just tragic. It seems like it's not even daily events anymore. It's like hourly events now in this country that, I'm just grateful to have had the weekend I had. And hopefully you were able to have that kind of weekend with the ones you love. And, you know,
you got to tell you, man, I love 4th of July. It's a great opportunity for us to get out. And living in San Diego, San Diego's banner holiday is the 4th of July. And so whether you took in your fireworks at the Big Bay Boom or at the Delmar County Fair, wherever you took your fireworks in at, I hope that you had an opportunity to really soak in the day and have a good time. And because I can't, that can't be said for everywhere across the country.
No.
This show is free to speak as we feel whatever is on our mind to speak. And I got to tell you, there were three shootings in this country that absolutely put a stamp on what America is, whether you like it or not. As much as America is hot dogs and fireworks and beaches for the 4th of July, it's also shootings. Whether it be police shootings or whether it be mass shootings, there's nothing more American at this point then turning on the news and seeing a parade having an active shooter at it, turning on the news again later that night on Monday night and see people running for their life in Philadelphia. It breaks my heart to know that we just have to accept this. And I mean, we don't have to, but we are. We have accepted this is what we are, and this is how we're moving forward. It doesn't matter who dies. It doesn't matter where they die. It doesn't matter what day the shooting happens on. It doesn't matter where the shooting happens. We're not getting rid of the guns. As much as I would like to, and as much as other people would like to, we won't even regulate the guns as much as I would like to, or as much as anybody would like to. And I'm not even take your guns away guy. I'm not even him. I'm register your guns guy. And they don't even want to do that. So the fact that we have this kid, man, I don't know what you want to call him, climb on top of this building and fire into this parade. And I got to do justice to the police department there because they did a kick-ass job. A lot of times we, especially after Uvalde and what happened also in Indiana with them shooting this guy 90 times and he never even fired a shot, didn't even have a weapon. The police did what police are supposed to do. They showed up in an active shooter situation. They were prepared. The guy got away because
they were there. It was a parade.
Right.
They were working.
The guy got away.
That's part of me goes, wait a minute. Like all of these excuses about like, arm teachers, arm these people, arm that person, arm the librarian, arm that. Like who's it stopping? Because this dude showed up to where the cops work, where they were at, where they were on duty, the 4th of July parade that, I mean, that's where
they probably had a parade in the parade.
Well, of course, they either have certain guys being on, but they are there too. They are there for crowd control, for security, for other things. I mean, they are working the parade on July 4th. So it just shows you how emboldened, like, it doesn't matter. Like, you can arm teachers, you can arm. And it's like, it's gonna keep happening no matter who you arm. That was proof. I mean, these parades are proof. And that's what's really scary. And because we're just gonna accept to, like, and to touch on your point of about not taking your guns and believing in certain gun rights. Of course, we always will have those certain gun rights. I don't know, like, it's a slippery slope. Why? To have a weapon of war, be background checked to the teeth and hard to get for even the most common non-criminal law-abiding person should have to have a hard time getting one of those. And it's not. And it never will be. And so the police force oftentimes are being outgunned. They are literally on the smaller end of the weaponry at times. A guy literally called 911 over to his house during a domestic dispute and ambushed him.
Yeah.
You know, three cops. Yeah. I mean, he had an arsenal. And when they came to arrive for their domestic call, which are dangerous at any time, just because that's the most dangerous call domestically. You never know what that raging man may do in a domestic abuse, depending on what it, I mean, then he just starts pumping, but like, and now there's a standoff and these guys are pinned back behind their cars. I mean, that's what we're dealing with. And the nonsensical, you know, it's everybody's right to have one. And we're going to hunt wild pigs.
Ferret. You're going to shoot some ferrets.
So I had to
talk about that because I hate that because we're a sports centric show that we need to always talk about sports, and I just don't believe
in
that.
You've gotta sometimes it's too bad that this is the elephant in the room and the elephant just keeps running through the same room and they don't. I mean, it's probably as we speak, there's probably one happening somewhere in America right now.
Speaking of something that's happening completely across America that caught me off guard, two things. The Kevin Durant trade rumor or request we were not here for. So we'll get into that for a little bit. But the thing I want to talk about is the veil is off, okay? The mistress lives in the house now, okay? College football is a money printing machine. That's all it is. I don't want to hear anybody tell me that a kid, the USC playing Rutgers, they're going to miss classes. Stop it. I don't care. Because if you want to tell me anything other than this is about money, do you know that college football is played on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday? They don't care about the kids. Okay, it's about television revenue. It's about ESPN and Fox and CBS having some live programming for their sports
Big Ten Network,
Notre Dame's SEC contract network, with TV, Notre Dame's contract with NBC. This is about money. That's it. The fact that USC and UCLA are going to the Big Ten, a place where geographically they simply don't belong, as no one. Like, this is a football move, okay? When you do gymnastics and it's UCLA versus Rutgers, okay? That team, that costs money. All that costs money. You're taking away a drive to Cal Berkeley. You're taking away a drive to Stanford. You're taking away a drive to Arizona State. Every game that they play now will require a plane flight for every team at the university.
Right.
And is it
right? But think about the money that, think about the TV revenue that USC versus Ohio State, USC versus Penn State, USC versus Michigan, that's going to cover all that. That kind of extra and more intense revenue and the ability to spread them matchups out over that's going to take care of all of that, because who cares about USC and Cal? Who cares about USC and Arizona State? Who cares about USC and Arizona? Who cares about USC and Utah? Nobody. Nobody even cares about USC and UCLA. That's why they both had to go to the Big Ten.
This is a terrible, for me, this is a terrible thing to happen in college sports. There's no reason. If you want to play these teams during the year, USC plays Notre Dame. USC plays, I think they play somebody else as well. That's in geographically in that area. To get into that conference, this is about money. And I've sat so long watching people say, don't pay the players, don't pay the players, don't pay the players. Now that NIL it's out and it's happening, there's no way to stop these teams now. They're going, well, whatever. We're going to the Big Ten. We're changing conferences. Oh, Texas, we're going to the SEC. It's about money. It's always been about money. I'm happy now that it's publicly just not hidden anymore, and we can just go on with it just being minor league sports now. They're feeder system for pro leagues in this country, and we should just call them that. I don't ever want to hear any one of these old school heads go on television and go, but the scholarship. To the damn with the scholarship.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, like especially like basketball. You know, UCLA flying into these cold, USC flying into these long, cold flights going cross country and vice versa. You know, going into Iowa in January when it's snowy and dark, and going into Ann Arbor in February or whatnot. Because, I mean, conference play is – that's it. I mean, it's January and February, yes, all the way into the early part of March until the conference tournament starts. I mean, that is the teeth of conference play. So, you know, you're going to have those kind of logistics, like you said, in a lot of those other kind of sports that have to travel in those types of weathers and those types of, you know, trying to make short trips out of long, arduous flights cross country back and forth. So that is going to be interesting, but money trumps all. And USC, Ohio State, you know, if USC's got, you know, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, and let's say an Iowa on the same schedule that year, I mean, think of all that extra revenue that is. How much more attractive to the TV viewer that just loves college and the gambler, right? I mean, let's not fool everybody here. Not only does, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday football extend the ability to have way more TV contracts and revenue, it also gets Vegas ding, 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 and all week long too. And it's not just they're not just waiting for that Saturday truckload of bets. They're getting them poured in. I mean, you look at an average Thursday night schedule now. It looks like, you know, it's almost a full NFL slate on Sunday. Look at the amount of matchups. I mean, so, there's all these types of, they're going to skin so many cats. And now with, you know, legal gambling in a lot of these states and then the state revenues that are going to, you know, take out the Big Ten country is already there. I mean, it's amazing. California hasn't got on board yet.
November,
there's a big vote. We'll see. And, but yeah, I mean, so all of those factors, all of those things, and it is, you know, this is kind of turned, college football has just done whatever it can to get whatever it can. You know, the NFL kind of has a structured way of just like, hey, these are the finances. We can grow the game this much, certain ways, yada, yada. We'll jump in with Amazon, that kind of, you know, they have their old, but it's old kind of old money, right? Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football was new when it was new, but it's now it's been in there for a long time. They do the Saturday game. They do the Thursday night game. But, man, college is just like, they're grabbing off of every fruit tree that they can, and they don't care. If in 4 years USC has to go to the SEC, they'll go to the SEC, right? Or you know, I'm just making an example. But I think it's time for the Big Ten. It's high time to maybe say, we got to cut some fat, though. You know, they're not going to cut Rutgers because of the New York TV market. But, you know, what's maybe Nebraska doing in this conference still? What's maybe somebody, you know, if you're going to go take USC and UCLA – then maybe a Nebraska, maybe a Minnesota needs to go find another home.
Speaking of finding other homes, we live in the greater San Diego County between the two of us. And San Diego State just spent a lot of money and a pretty nasty battle to get that football stadium built in what was the old Qualcomm land, also known as Mission Valley. With UCLA and USC leaving, the Pac, whatever, if San Diego State, and I mean this 100%, and I've said this at other places because that airs before this, and I will say it here now, if San Diego State does not get themselves into the Pac, whatever's left over, stop playing football. Stop. Stop playing football. Sell that stadium to the San Diego Loyal. Change the colors because they're just seats. Don't waste your money because you built this stadium to attract bigger and better. Now, here you are, your upper management, whatever it takes for you to get into that conference, do it. There are more people now in San Diego County viewing eyeballs than any other city in the pack, fill in the blank. We've got more people here. We have the eyeballs. We just need the platform. So if San Diego State, J.D. Wicker, whoever is in charge of making sure that this works, if you do not get this done, whether it be the Pac, whatever, or the Big 12 or whatever they're at this point, resign and let somebody else put that work in. Because whatever maneuvers you got to pull, whoever's phone you got to call, whoever's you got to wink, wink, nod, nod, to get this job done, this is the legacy build right here. This is it. It's not that stadium. You get this team into the Pac, whatever, or the Big 12. Now you are in the big boy land. You've had the best record in college football in California for over a decade. You've had the best basketball team in California for over a decade. Get into one of these power conferences and prove that on a national level, and then you will have the over 3 million eyeballs. You can get half of them to watch a football game on TV.
Yeah, and I think you just mentioned the word basketball. I was going to say as important or maybe if not more important, I think it's even more important for the basketball team to get into this conference because when you look at, and it's still a great, the football team, of course, has to make this move if they have that chance and they've got to get in there, but mainly basketball, right? UCLA leaves, USC leaves. The basketball program's already solidified in itself in the Mountain West. And you can really come through this conference in basketball as an elite program, right? Arizona's done it. Others have done it. But I'll tell you, ever since things have gone bad in USC, the Pac-12, with USC or without them, they are not a football championship contender anymore. Ever since the football playoff has started, Oregon got to one representative and got smeared in the final game. And any other team, Washington or whoever else has been able to dance in there in the few Pac-12 appearances that there's been in the Final Four football, they've not gone well. And so if it's not USC as a top contender, then the Pac-12 doesn't have a top contender. So get in there for football. You know, try to solidify yourself, but it's basketball that's important for this school to get in there because you can turn a strong, consistent program into an elite in the Pac-12. There's still Arizona in there. There's still Stanford in there. There's still some good programs up and down that conference, and you're going to be in that level to play, I think, and recruit at a higher level even, and it's just as important, and both of those programs getting in is just going to feed the recruiting for both of them. Football being in is going to help basketball. Basketball being in is going to help football along with that new stadium. And it's a no-brainer. It'll be a big ball drop if they don't do it.
One of the largest complaints about the kids here, and I know this because I've spoken to them. I used to be one of them. San Diego State has no national view.
Right.
San Diego State, from a West Coast perspective, are behind schools like Arizona. They're behind UCLA. They're behind Stanford. They're behind UW. They're behind larger universities. Well, not even larger universities, but higher profile universities whose only higher profile because they're in the Pac-12.
Utah's a great example.
Yes.
Utah's a great example of what San Diego State should be sitting in.
Yes. And so if they can't figure this out, they will never be able to beat anybody out for any top-level recruits. They'll never be able to have a single argument as to why they cannot get into the Power Five or why they can't get into the championship window. You can go five undefeated seasons. It won't matter. It legit won't matter.
And that's the thing is that they got to take the risk of being able to deal with going 6-5 maybe, 6-5 a couple of times to work their way in. And instead of just these 10-2 Mountain West that do nothing for you, 11-1, whatever, because if you can weather a couple of 6-5s and even a 5-6 early because you're just trying to get your footing and you finally start recruiting, the 8-3s, 9-2s, and 10-1s may possibly come again quicker than you think. And it's going to be worth it.
In football and in basketball, what this allows you to do is attract top-level coaches. Allows you to attract top-level coaches, and coaches like lifestyle. And what better place to have a lifestyle for a head football coach or basketball coach than San Diego, California? And we've got some other stuff we got for y'all when we come back. Brown and Law ahead here on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. Welcome back to Browner and Lawhead here on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio, Southern California Mega Market. I'm John Browner. That's Jason Lawhead. We are with you every Monday through Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m. I almost said 6 to 7 p.m., and I actually think that is correct. 6 to 7 p.m., I am all over the place. This iPad, this thing I record the show on is really, it's taking a piss, as they say. In England, and I don't know what's going on with it, but I'll figure it out when this is over. You, Jason Lawhead, what's up with the shirt?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about this. This is a great day. 75 years
explain
ago.
Explain it to the people. Explain it what it looks like to people on the radio.
You can see it. It's obviously a batter, right? It's a like mural of, I don't know which way I'm supposed to go in this, but. It's Larry Doby. It's Larry Doby Day, the great Cleveland legend, the first black player to break into the American leagues. On this day, 75 years ago, 1947, and this is a shirt of his, like, and there's all kinds of cool things, like his MVP year, his rookie of the year, all the stuff that's written, and it's a Larry Doby shirt. So it was my dad's favorite player as a kid. My dad was, like, about 9 years old, a kid growing up in Cleveland, and my dad... His father was a big baseball coach, baseball organizer, and used to go to spring trainings all the time in Arizona. But so he used to take my dad to the ballpark all the time in those eras of Bob Feller and when Doby came in. And my dad actually wore number 14 in high school in sports in honor of Larry Doby. It was his favorite ball player. And so, you know, I know my dad watches some of these. I wanted to give a shout out to Larry Doby on Larry Doby Day for all those Cleveland Indian fans and even the ones that are Guardian fans. Great history with the Cleveland Indians, first black player in the American leagues. And he actually came straight from the Negro leagues. You know, Jackie Robinson was ushered in, right? He was signed by the Dodgers. He played in their minor league organization. He was kind of like groomed by Branch Rickey a little bit to figure out what to expect at the minor league level, where Doby was just like, you know, they threw him on a bus in the South and said, send him to Cleveland. And it was an overnight type of thing. So he had a lot of challenges coming in. And he went right to work, man. What a great ball player. So on all the craziness and all the, you know, things that go that we talk about that aren't, you know, related to too much sports, I wanted to bring that up and honor, you know, one of the great Cleveland Indians of all time. And my dad loved him, and so he's always been special to me. Larry Doby, number 14.
You know what? I just had this idea. Well, I have a philosophy. I enjoy speaking to people who can tell me about the history of this country from a sports perspective. And I think our first guest on this show should be your dad.
Oh, wow.
Here's why. Your father is a well-renowned basketball coach. That's the first one. This is primarily a basketball show. Don't get it twisted, people.
Two. Right. It usually is. Right.
Two. Your father has lived through some of the most important stages of American sports history.
Yeah.
And he can talk about those. And that, to me, is worth more than any breaking news event that we could have tomorrow. Not saying that we'll have him on tomorrow. We'll probably try to get him on next week.
Yeah, you know what? Well, maybe what we'll try to do is when I have to take this on the road next time, the next time I take the show on the road into Cleveland, maybe I'll bring him in so then that way he can, because trying to get him to figure out something where we're going to get him on a third screen. No, that ain't happening. Without like the help of like a camera crew at the house, we're going to have to like spend money to contract a camera crew to send us.
Show up.
So maybe what I'll do is next time I go and take the equipment to do the show from either my sisters or wherever I go when I'm on the road, I'll arrange it where we have him in and he sits in with us and he can give us a segment, at least a segment where he's gives us some wise old stuff. He's got some great stories of meeting Jim Brown in a bar after a Giants game when my dad was in the service still. And Jim Brown, early 60s.
To be alive during the Jim Brown era, the Muhammad Ali era.
My dad saw Babe Ruth when he was a child. At the end of Babe Ruth's life, Babe Ruth would go around to the ballparks when he was like dying. They put him in a Yankee jersey. It was like hanging on him. And he would go around the year before he died, the summer before, my dad was 9. And he would go around all the ballparks. And he would stand at like around the pitcher's mound with a fungo bat. And he would take a bucket of baseballs and he would just knock them into the crowd, up into the upper decks and into the bleachers. And he would just go through a bucket and just send souvenirs out. My dad actually saw that. And we talked about that when we went to the Masters this year, when I was like, Dad, like you're seeing Tiger in his Sunday red in Augusta, like in 2022. I mean, I'm like, you saw Babe Ruth when you were a little boy, and now you've seen in Cleveland Stadium, and now you've seen Tiger Woods, and you know, you've met Jim Brown. It's just amazing. You're right. I mean, yeah, you know, one of the few times I've ever seen my dad draw a tear, and I love that we've kind of gone off this rails, but this is a cool story. You know, I haven't seen my dad cry. I don't know. I can't count on more than a hand that I've ever seen my dad cry. There, we had a priest when I was a young boy around 7 or 8. There was a priest who was the principal at the high school, and he was killed in a car accident on an evening where we got the news and somebody had called, and it's like 1980, and that hit my dad hard. He cried. And then obviously, I think when his father passed away, I remember seeing tears. But, you know, one of the only other times I ever saw my dad cry was when he saw Muhammad Ali light the torch in Atlanta at the Olympics. Because he had seen that whole world develop in front of him as a young man. He wasn't much around the same age as Ali, you know. So when he was a young man, he was following Ali's life. Right along the same timeline. And that was something to watch. Like he gushed, and that was cool.
And that's one of the things where you have a person who has witnessed all that history to see the change in the way people view Muhammad Ali in this country has been astounding. Like he was at one point, he was public enemy number one.
Oh yeah.
Like people hated him.
Oh, and MAGA would have killed him.
And to the point where when on his last days, he was one of the most revered athletes in the history of this country. And so it's and to talk to somebody who witnessed that transformation, who was able to see him light the torch, the Olympic torch in Atlanta as a representation for this country, when at one point in time the man wouldn't fight because he didn't believe in what we were doing as a country in other places. And so it just, that's why I think your dad should be our first guest. So.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll try to put that together for early August when I go back.
I think that'll be cool, man. What's not cool is what's happening with Kevin Durant. Look, I'm writing an article. I haven't gotten halfway through it yet, but I think, if you don't know, Kevin Durant requested a trade from the Brooklyn Nets last week because of just simply the way everything has gone. And I honestly believe that Kevin Durant's problem has nothing to do with basketball. I've now settled on a theory about Kevin Durant. What he is looking for has nothing to do with sports. The idea that people think what Kevin Durant's mobility is about, it is not basketball. He left Oklahoma City because he felt like he couldn't win there, or people were giving him a hard time for winning. Then he goes to Golden State, he wins, and then he leaves Golden State because he didn't feel a part of that team. And now there isn't even a report as to why he's leaving Brooklyn. Just that, oh, the front office is a mess. Bro, they gave you full control of the organization, so if the front office is a mess, it's totally because of you. So whatever he's searching for, it has nothing to do with basketball. I think when everybody knows a person who has everything or has the appearance of everything and just isn't happy with what they have. I honestly think that's Kevin Durant. I really do. I honestly believe that Kevin Durant is a person people look at and go, this guy's got everything. He's got money. He's got success. He's got fame. He's got women. He's got admiration. But every time you see him, he just doesn't seem happy. And I think that what's happening to him in Brooklyn is one, is a bad sign of character. Two, it has nothing to do with basketball. And I don't think Brooklyn can fix this issue. And I don't think he knows that this issue is more than basketball. So that and some other things that happened, but off the top of my head and what I've have written down, that is the main thing that I've come back to the show since we left going, you know, I don't think this is about basketball when Kevin Durant. What do you say, Jason?
Well, I think a lot of it is to maybe just kind of examine your point a little bit. I see Kevin Durant, and I think you hit on some very, you know, logical kind of spots of what you're saying about, you know, it isn't about basketball, where he's at. Yeah, I think, you know, the two rings are kind of like that symbol of, well, I don't have to prove anything. I've got the rings, right? They can't ever say anything about anything because I got the
finals
rings,
MVPs away
and I got
me.
Two final MVPs to go along with those rings. So I can go somewhere every year. And what you can't say is I got those two. I got two more than a lot of these greats that sit there and criticize me or got something to say about me, you know, that are sitting on TV or whatever. And that's kind of, he's got like that chip on his shoulder media wise a little bit with his burner account, social media, regular media. So I think that in that sense, yeah, I mean, I see a guy that really doesn't have anything to prove other than he's got a biggest chess piece always to play, and he knows it because of the kind of player he is. How many more years of that he has left, we shall see.
Right.
But I just feel like Kevin Durant is kind of, he has that barnstormers mentality. He's kind of very, you know, mercenary. If you were to say that, obviously out of the major sports, basketball within the team framework is still probably the most individual sport, because at least in baseball, you have 9 defensive positions that do have to work together at least at one half of that inning for 9 innings of a game. Right. Like, so, even though batting and a lot of times is an individual, you know, look, you, even if you're trying to, that's going to bread your butter is batting statistics. But he's kind of a designated hitter type of basketball player in a sense, where he just kind of is looking for, you know, keeping them numbers up, keeping that money coming in, keeping that admiration, and knowing that he's a, you know, a guy that hits, you know, 40 homers and hits for 300-something, and you're always going to want him in the lineup no matter where he is. So bigger than Bigger Than Basketball, I believe that, yeah, he's kind of has that eye a little bit. And I think he's proving it now with his, you know, descending from Brooklyn. I thought Brooklyn was the really that was the spot that was going to say whether this guy had the stones, had the metal, yes, to be his own LeBron, his own Steph, his own whatever, Kawhi, whatever you want to say is, you know, the alpha dog, alpha man that's going to put a franchise on his shoulders and take him to the promised land. And that was just what they did in those couple of years was just an absolute tank job as far as what the expectations were. So he'll move on wherever it is, Utah. I don't know. It's just going to be a little bit more of the same competitive team. Sure, they've got Kevin Durant, and they'll have other players wherever he goes. Phoenix, will he be the guy that puts them on his shoulders and carries them? I mean, I don't know. Like, he was in an amazing situation in Golden State. Those don't come around much. That's a career, you know, chance to have Steph and there, those guys where they were at their peak.
I'm Brooklyn, and there is, you know, nothing that you can give me for him that would even come close to equaling what I'm giving you. So they say the three front running teams right now are Phoenix, Miami, and Philadelphia. Not a single one of those.
Windhorse was reporting a lot on Utah making a move for this, I thought, but
they don't. If I'm the Brooklyn Nets, and this is what the Brooklyn Nets have said out loud to people, reporters, and to teams reportedly, we want two all-stars and picks.
Yeah.
There isn't a team on that list that he's given them that has that. Because if I'm Brooklyn and you're going to take Kevin Durant, I want Devin Booker. If you are Brooklyn, and Miami wants him, I need Jimmy Butler.
If I'm Brooklyn with the way things are going right now, because they're not going to get any of that. Let me tell you something. Brooklyn isn't going to get any of that. If they get rid of Kevin Durant, they're eventually going to get whittled down and taken to the cleaners. So if I'm Brooklyn, I'm going to be like, dude, if I'm going to be bad, I'll be bad with these guys I invested in being bad with and hold on to them until they decide whether they want to keep being bad. Because it's like Kyrie's in the same kind of trajectory as Durant, just kind of different personalities, but I don't really see it. I think the shot and the title was enough for him. I think he rests on that a lot, and he just goes out and just gets his points and gets his things. And as far as, you know, being the guy that you can like lean on and go, let's go get that guy. Like I said, I go, most of these guys available are never available. I go, yeah, are you going to go to get these guys that play freaking 38 games?
If I'm the Brooklyn Nets, I'm not trading him unless I get what I want. And if he doesn't want to play, then I'm not paying you. You're choosing.
I want plus 10% over it, right? You got to come over the top. You got to give me what I want plus something sweet.
I'm not getting involved at all, not even a little. Y'all gonna have to give me what I want, or he'll play for us, or he won't play at all. And that goes for both these two bozos who apparently want to play together on another team. Listen, no thanks, unless I get what I want. I don't want expiring contracts because I'm not bottoming out. Mm-mm. These guys are in the prime of their careers. I'm getting players. I'm getting living, walking bodies who can give me buckets, because we still have Ben Simmons, who is an all-star, who is an all-NBA player, who is a psycho who can't get his brain together. But if he does, we got one all-star already on our roster who's committed to us. We can fill the rest of this out, but we've got to get players to do so. And if they can't do that, then I'm just going to wait, and I'm going to sit here, and I'm going to watch Kevin Durant not play and not collect his money, which he's got tons of money. He's really smart, a businessman. So his business acumen is next level. So it won't be about the money. It'll be about the basketball for him. And I don't think he can sit on the sideline and just watch like Kyrie did.
No. And especially with the I would challenge his biological clock. Absolutely. And say, go ahead, sit down. And you know what? I'd rather be disappointingly mediocre to my franchise and be on national TV 12 times a year and still have people coming through the turnstiles because you're on the team and maybe Kyrie's on the team. And even if it's dysfunctional, I'd rather be that dysfunctional with what I've already invested and force you guys to have to answer why you're mediocre and you're underachievers. So I'll live with that as an owner. I owners are never popular. I don't care what you say. Even, period. Yeah, you go back to the Bulls, you go back to the Bulls dynasty, and in their owners defense, are never most, popular.
And in their defense, amazingly, they're mostly anonymous. Like, what does Joseph Tsai look like? You don't know. You don't know. You barely know what Jeannie Buss looks like, and she's on TV all the time. So if I'm an owner, if I'm the Brooklyn Nets owner, I'm sitting on these two dudes. You're going to play for me because it can't be worse than it was last year. And if it did, guess whose reputation you're hurting? Yours, not mine. Kevin Durant, we just gave you a new four-year deal that we're not even paying you on that deal yet. You're going to play for us, period. Or you're not going to play. So, and then we'll sue you.
Because on paper, I'm making executive of the year moves. It's the guys on the court that are letting you down as a fan base.
Yes, Kyrie's your guy. You told us he was okay. You told us you had this under control. Now it appears that you don't. So this is you made this bed. It's Brooklyn sheets, and you're going to lie in them. Because if not, we're not going to bail you out. We don't, because they're like, oh, he went to Joseph Tsai personally. And I'm like, okay, Joseph Tsai should have picked up the phone, put Sean Marks on speaker, and said, all right, Kevin, talk to him. He does the basketball stuff. I'm just a rich guy who owns the team. Like, this is I love Kevin Durant. I'm a huge fan, but what he's done is absolutely ridiculous. On the way out, Brittany Griner wrote a letter to President Biden to help her escape the clutches of Russia. We got less than a minute. It ain't happening. Sorry. Jason, give me 20 seconds.
Yeah, we've talked about it a little bit before. I mean, it's, look, you're in a world and a place that has types of human rights violations, and look, they've got a way of doing things, and that's just
to facilitate a trade, you have to have something they want. We don't have anything they want. They got you, and they're going to try to put public pressure on us to get you back. But I'm sorry, leave a message at the beep. Till next time, I'm John Browner. That's Jason Lawhead. This is Browner and Lawhead on the Mighty 290 ESPN. We'll see y'all tomorrow, same time, same channel. Peace.